There are so many great things happening in the Archdiocese of St. Paul and Minneapolis.
It's like in the Book of Esther. God has placed each of us in this local church for a time like this.
We're just all people of God.
You know, we're all human. We're all fallen. We're all sinners.
I think we put on Christ, we put on love.
Put on Christ with us as we learn to witness in new ways, find inspiration in those around us, and look for guidance from the Holy Spirit, our Holy Mother Church, and the shepherds of our local church.
Because we're all on a journey.
Continue this journey with us now with another episode of Practicing Catholic. Welcome to Practicing Catholic. This is your co-host, Leah Hazelton.
And this is someone who probably am old enough to be your father. Father Tom Margavichus.
Well, you are my father.
And you're my daughter in Christ.
Oh, wow, thank you.
Why am I bringing that up?
Yes, we have two guests this week that probably could be mother and daughter, or
even
grandmother and granddaughter.
Grandmother and granddaughter.
Just by their age differences. And they're speaking about the same topic of social media and technology. And even though they have different perspectives on it and different things to add to the conversation, they're not speaking these two separate languages in their conversation.
Well, we all live in the real world here. Nowadays, almost everybody is driving with GPS, regardless of your age.
Mm-hmm.
All seniors are on Facebook now, and they all have smartphones, just like young generation. So technology is used all across all generations. So both Kate Souchere and also Mackenzie Hunter are fully aware of the advantages and the necessity in our Western world, especially, of living with technology. So it's not like either one of them looks at technology itself as the problem, but it can create challenges.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And these challenges, Dr. Kate really goes into the different ways that social media can be harmful. And Mackenzie Hunter has a Catholic Instagram account called A Caffeinated Catholic, and she finds ways to spread the gospel living an ordinary Catholic life and sharing this on social media.
So neither one is saying get rid of technology, but neither are they saying technology is going to be the solution to all life's concerns.
Exactly. And I think having both of these conversations together in one episode just shows the value that different generations can have in this conversation.
Well, this was a risk, frankly, that the Archdiocese took in putting you and me together.
Very true.
On the air at the same time.
Very true.
Right.
We have very different life experience. Me only being 26.
And me, you switch the numbers. I'm 63, actually. So it's a fascinating thing to be so many years apart and yet here united by this thing called technology.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're behind microphones here and we're watching Rachel mix the board.
Mm-hmm.
And Paul is listening in, and so are thousands of listeners, we hope, you know. And if they're not listening via the old-fashioned technology of AM radio, more likely they're listening with the podcast, yeah. Spotify and Apple Podcasts and everything else. So we're taking advantage of technology.
Yes.
And we're actually working out our relationship in full listening hood, again, not watching, but they're listening, to see, trying to feel how are you and I relating? What can you and I learn from Hunter and Mackenzie?
Mm-hmm.
and Kate Souchere?
Mm-hmm.
Both trying to work out their own approach to the issue there.
Yeah, and I just keep thinking of what we can learn from each other, Father. I know just our last month and a half of co-hosting the show, I feel like I've learned so much from you. Every time we're on air or off air, I'm just so grateful for all of your insights and your knowledge of the world just through the life you've lived, and then all of your education too. It's just so fun to learn about all these things.
And yet your generation has a certain openness, a willingness, a desire to enter into the world placed in front of you with optimism and energy, that I just sometimes just want to sit back and watch a ball game, and you just, let's do something. All right, you keep me energetic, you keep me interested, you don't let me slide.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I learned from you as well.
Mm-hmm. Archbishop uses the verse from Esther quite a bit, you were made for a time such as this. And I guess I really believe that we're made for different times in the way that we're part of different generations, but we're also made for the same time too, because we're both sitting here on this broadcast.
We're both part of the living, timeless body of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
Each in his and her own generational perspective, nevertheless, has the opportunity to learn from each other, just as Kate and Hunter can learn from, and Mackenzie can learn from each other. And I think we're in for a really good show today.
Yes, we are.
Have you ever wondered what evangelization looks like in a world dominated by screens and social media? How do you share timeless faith in a space that's always changing? Today, we're getting answers from Mackenzie Hunter, the voice behind the Instagram account, A Caffeinated Catholic. She joins us to unpack what it means to evangelize in the digital age. She's helping thousands experience faith in a fresh and relatable way, and we're excited to hear her story. Mackenzie, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
I know you were on Practicing Catholic when Patrick was hosting, and he asked you a little bit about coffee, but I'm wondering what your favorite go-to coffee order is.
If I'm out at a coffee shop, I get a iced hazelnut latte, half sweet, but at home I just drink black coffee.
Amazing. Father Tom, do you have a go-to coffee order?
I really don't. I don't hardly ever go out for coffee. I have a cup in the morning, but I always do with a little bit of cream and sugar the way my mom would serve it to us as kids. But one cup a morning, that's enough for me.
You never go out for coffee, Father. We might have to change that as we start hosting together. I don't all the time either, but when I do, I always get an iced vanilla latte. I'm kind of boring.
Classic. I love it.
What kind of black coffee do you like, Mackenzie?
Oh gosh, I have a variety of ones I try. Actually, I'll give a shout out. I just started drinking a Catholic coffee company. It's called Gloria Patri, and they sent me this amazing pack with three different types of roasts, and it's Our Father, Hail Mary, and Glory Be. So works out well.
Mackenzie happens to be my roommate, so I also just had some of the Our Father blend the other day, and it was very, very good.
Free advertising.
And how would you describe each blend?
Well, they're holy. Dark, medium, and roast. Yeah, with a hint of holy.
All right, but enough about coffee. Mackenzie, for those who haven't heard your other episode with Practicing Catholic, what inspired you to start A Caffeinated Catholic, and how's it grown over the past couple of years?
That's a great question. So back in 2018, I had a blog website that I had started, and I really describe it as an overflow from my prayer life. I loved writing, and I don't know, it just felt like the Lord had something to say. So I would just write and post it online, eventually kind of realizing that people didn't so much read blog websites anymore. I think there's actually being a little bit of a comeback for them. But 2018, no one was really reading them. And so I started the Instagram account, Caffeinated Catholic, in January 2019, and would post, say, like, oh, go read at the link in my bio. And that kind of developed over time, realizing the kind of short form content that people are more drawn to. So it's a lot of similar content that it started as, but has adapted over the years. And it's been really cool to see what the Lord has done through it. I think the platform has changed as I have. But in the past few years, I've been, coming up on 7 years in January that I will have had the Instagram for. And then just last May 2024, it really started to catch wind a bit. I had a large jump from 6,000 to like 20,000 followers. And it was a weird thing of like, what's the Lord trying to do with this platform like right now? Like of all times, why now? But it's been really cool to see how it's like blessed more people. And just, I'm the medium. It's the way the Lord works through it. And I'm just very aware that it's him working through it, because it's nothing I do. I don't do anything too special, not anything different than what a lot of people do. But for some reason, he had people he wanted to speak to through it. So, yeah.
Mother Teresa says that she was a pencil in the Lord's hand. And sometimes I think that's kind of how you are, just his pencil, and you're just letting him write a story.
I love that. Yeah. No, I think that's well said.
But
Mother Teresa.
One of the things that your blog has just given you is you just went to the Jubilee for Digital Missionaries and Catholic Influencers. That is something new, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. It's the first first Jubilee in a number of years, but they this year decided to do, they're calling it the Jubilee, but essentially it was a gathering. It was kind of under the Jubilee for Youth, and it was a gathering of digital missionaries. It was a two-day event, with about 1,000 people gathered at the Vatican to talk about digital mission and what we can do to evangelize through these digital platforms today. It was really cool to be invited to that, like such an honor. And the first day was a lot of, I think it was a lot of hearing from people who are doing really great things and also just like higher up people at the Vatican coming and showing their support, which is really huge. And it was cool to meet with other creators and learn a little bit about their missions and things like that. This was just in July.
Well, Mackenzie, I am 63 years old, and I'm guessing the median age of those attendees was about one third of my age.
Yeah, it was definitely, I would say, a bit of a younger crowd, which is cool to see how they're starting to, you know, take charge in the church and like kind of the rising generation. So definitely there was a bit of a mix, but I would say definitely leaning a bit younger.
There might be some in my generation who look at social media and say, these are wannabe disciples. They get maybe a little cynical, saying digital relationships are no substitute for face-to-face interaction. How might you respond to someone of my generation, if you will?
Yeah, I think that's been a huge discussion in the past like 10, 15, 20 years. And I think that was what a lot of people thought is that there's no way that it can replace in-person relationships, to which I'd say it's not supposed to. It's supposed to reach more people and encourage them to have those connections. It's really a door, or just, you know, kind of meeting people where they're at. I would say where people are, Catholics should be too. And people are on social media is the fact of the matter. And so I think Catholics need to show up in that space and encourage them to go have those encounters, but can just kind of plant that mustard seed. So then, you know, if they talk to someone in real life who's Catholic, you know, it's like, oh, well, I've seen this Instagram content. But it's really important to keep at the heart of it that it's real people we're dealing with, and real relationships should never be taken out of the equation.
Yeah. Yeah, I think about the mission of the Daughters of St. Paul, and their mission is like St. Paul. St. Paul would be in the forums and with all of the Gentiles evangelizing, and that's why that order of sisters, they're the social media sisters, so-called, and that's why St. Paul is their patron, because they are where St. Paul would have been, and he would have been on social media, which is so interesting.
Yeah.
What would you say your mission is of a caffeinated Catholic? Like, how is it that you're evangelizing, and what makes your content?
Yeah, I think that it is a mustard seed platform, kind of like we were just saying. It's to plant that mustard seed in people, especially for those who have seen the faith in a way they haven't resonated with. There's something to be said for seeing someone who you see yourself in, like people who are similar to me. I'm fairly average, and so if people see themselves in me, it's like, oh, maybe the Catholic faith isn't so scary. But I'm not online doing apologetics and this and that, like hard-hitting content. It's a little bit softer-hitting content for people who like just kind of need to gain that familiarity with Catholicism, with someone who is Catholic. And then, yeah, plant that mustard seed and let the Lord continue to work in their lives. It's just supposed to be first stepping stone.
Now, as an influencer, I mean, that term is thrown around with some kind of impressive sounding implications to it. How much time do you actually spend with your Instagram account, for example?
What do you mean by how much time do I spend?
Well, like, is it a full-time job for you? Do you earn income? Where does the money come from? You know, or you supplement this with other stuff, you know?
Sure. No, it is not a full-time job for me. I work full-time in advertising, and this just started as a little side project, and it just happens to have gotten a little bit of win the past year. So it's maintained a side gig for me. Who knows where the Lord will take it going forward. But some people do, and there is money involved, but it's interesting. And I do think there's some discernment on, like, you know, brands you want to work with and things like that. I always make sure it's missions that I feel aligned with. I think it's good. It's a true side hustle, I'd say.
And with your content too, Mackenzie, I know that the evangelization and like the digital mission of it is at the forefront, whereas like the influencing of it with all these products has just kind of come lately, and it's definitely a second tier for you, right?
I think that's a good clarification, because I think a lot of, when I think influencer, honestly, I think the term makes me and a lot of other people a little uncomfortable, because it doesn't feel quite right. I think even at this Jubilee, it was technically called Jubilee of Digital Missionaries and Catholic Influencers. And there was a lot of fodder around that, but I think a lot of people felt weird. They're like, influencer. Personally, when I think influencer, I think of the people who are online selling items. Like, that's like what they do it for. They're influencing you to dress a certain way or to like buy this product. And that's definitely not what I'm trying to do. I think, it's a digital community, a digital space. And then from there, if there are products that I, or programs or anything like that, that I think will like bring good into people's lives, like, sure, yeah, that's there, but it's secondary. And it definitely came, I mean, I've been doing this for nearly 7 years, and it's probably been the past year and a half maybe that that's been introduced. So definitely didn't lead with that.
But it is a good space to, you can share like these products that do have good missions. Something that I'm super convicted by is like the ethics behind some of our products. So it's so fun to drink coffee made by people who believe the same things I believe, rather than just like the beans I get from Aldi or something like that. Like there's an extra step to that. So it's nice to be able to know those things.
Yeah, to get good products and brands out there in the world. I agree.
Going back a little bit to the Jubilee, you mentioned again, and I wanted to ask, what do you think it means that the church is taking this serious, taking digital evangelization seriously and giving you those 2 days for that? What does it mean for the church?
Yeah, I think it's huge. As Father Tom was saying, it has been looked at. I think digital spaces have been looked at with a little bit of a negative lens for many, many years. And to have the Vatican putting on this event was a huge step, I think, and just showing support for it. Means a lot. I mean, I trust the church, you know, and so I want to follow what the ways she guides us. And so I think it's just validating a bit that like things that I've been convicted of, what so many other people have been convicted of for years. It's like, okay, you have the official church sign off, and they are like, let's talk about how to do this the right way. And yeah, to have like, it's just validating, I think, and shows, I think, the start of a new wave in the church.
Awesome.
During the waning years of his papacy, Pope Francis began to speak out more and more about digital technology, especially AI. And then, as we've seen in the past couple of months, Pope Leo has really taken that to the forefront. Has, you know, your community, or if you want to call it that, or the has Pope Leo weighed in with your group, with your the Jubilee attendees, with a personal message that would give like the church's hierarchical weight behind your contention that this actually can be used as a vehicle for spreading the gospel?
Yeah, he showed up at our event. So we had a mass on the second day with Cardinal Tagle. I was his name wrong. And afterwards, we were all waiting around, and all of a sudden heard some whispers, and Pope Leo did come out, which was really, really special, and gave an address to the digital missionaries, which again is just like really validating that he's taking this mission seriously, and took to heart a lot of the things he said. And a lot of it, I feel like, goes back to just keeping in mind that these are souls we're talking about. It isn't just numbers and followers. There are people behind this, and how can we use this digital space to reach those souls? So it was really special to hear from him. I encourage everyone to look up that address. It has some really good content in it.
Since you've come back from the Jubilee, how have you been excited by what happened and what you experienced?
It's a good question. Well, I just feel like there's been a real interest in the Catholic Church these days, as it is even pre-Jubilee. I was feeling this. It's been a bit of a shift in the narrative around the church. I think it's been negative for many years, and not that that doesn't exist anymore, but there's an increased interest. There was a stat that the, what is it? The Google searches for how to become Catholic have increased by 373% in recent months. And that was conducted in like May, maybe. So I'm sure it's only gone up from then, honestly, because I can feel it. You can really feel it. And so I think coming off of this event, I've just been really encouraged in seeing a lot of other quote unquote digital missionaries out in the world. I think people are just fired up and want to spread the word in whatever way they can. And I've been feeling that too. Personally, I felt really convicted. I think I had a bit of imposter syndrome going into this because it's like, what does my, I do like day in the life content or, you know, I'll do a reflection here and there, but it's not hard hitting all the time. And I walked away feeling really validated of like, there's a place for everyone. There's a place for the hard hitting apologetics and there's a place for the, you know, more softer approach that I was talking about. And it made me want to kind of keep down this road because I think there's a lot of people who that resonates with. And so important to have people in the digital space who speak to, I mean, we're all unique. If we're going to be online and talking, we're all going to have our own unique approaches to that and it's going to resonate with different people. Yeah, we're complex people. So we shouldn't all have the same content online. And so personally, I felt really validated and convicted by that.
Amen. Wow. You mentioned that you're feeling encouraged to spread the gospel a bit more. How has your account enabled you to share your faith more publicly, like at work and other kinds of things?
Yeah, that's a good question. It has, especially at work. So I work in a secular space. I love it. But it's been interesting now, especially in the past year and a half, since my account has got a few more eyes on it. People know about it. It's kind of public. It's always been public domain, but it's real public knowledge now. When I meet someone, a lot of times that's one of the first things that comes up. And so it's been a good challenge to learn how to like be a Catholic and how to operate in the secular world when everyone knows you're Catholic, you know, like I've always tried to be open about it. I a lot of times will wear Catholic jewelry or things like that, that it's like, I don't have to say it, but it's like, okay, just so you know. And it holds me to a certain standard too, because a lot of people don't encounter the church like you are the church they're encountering. And so it's been a really cool way to like, I don't even want to use the word evangelize because that feels a little not aggressive, but like it's softer than that. But to like be that Catholic faith, that Catholic witness to people in the secular world. So yeah, it's been interesting. It's pushed me in that regard for sure.
Yeah, you never know what that witness will do.
Well, in case you didn't hear it in the little car that drove in the background, Leah and Rachel both, not Rachel, and Mackenzie both know that I'm out walking as I'm a part of this interview here. And I just walked past a house that had a rainbow flag outside. Now, as a Catholic priest, I realize that if I were to walk up to this house with my collar, I might get a certain immediate reaction. Whereas if they go on the internet or Instagram and they come across your account, there's not that immediate resistance or suspicion. So you probably have an inroad in evangelistic forums that I do not, even though I've surrendered my life to this, but because I have that other layer on it, I might not be I might not be the influencer in certain areas that you can be.
Yeah, I think there's definitely something to that. Social media has given us the capability to reach people who would never set foot in a Catholic church, never go anywhere near someone who they see as Catholic, because the algorithm, you know, might push it. God can work through the algorithm and push it out to the people who need to see it. It's the greatest reach we've ever had. And I think there's something to that for sure, that like people who would typically resist a bit, it's a more approachable way for them to come into the faith.
Definitely. And it gives that Vatican II empowered the pursuit of holiness for all of the laity. So like we're all given this mission to spread the gospel. And yeah, social media just gives another avenue for the laity to take charge on that, honestly.
Yeah, absolutely.
So when you meet a person on the street, say outside the cathedral, and they say, oh, a caffeinated Catholic, how are you? How do you stay humble with that? Like, with all of that recognition, like, and keep it on the Lord.
Yeah, it's interesting. I feel like I was just talking to someone about this recently, about how it means a lot that people care a lot about, and even friends who are like proud of me, it means a lot, but like it's a little, I get almost uncomfortable with it sometimes, like when it comes up so frequently, because it's just not why I'm doing it. And when people are like, oh, hot shot over here. I just like, I don't, it makes me a little, I'm literally saying it right now, like gives me a pit in my stomach. I'm like, no, that's not what I'm trying to do here. So I don't know. I think like, I pivot conversation when I can. I say rooted in prayer. I think I know that that's not why I'm doing it. And so like, it's not influencing my platform in that way. But in conversation, I don't love when it like gets navigated that way. If it's someone who I don't know, who I just met, you know, I'll introduce myself, you know, I'll say, what do you do? But.
Well, enough of me talking about me. What do you think about me?
Yeah. No, and it means a lot that like people resonate with my mission. And so I don't like not talk about it. Like it's good, but I think there's a line and take some just like discernment and prayer to be able to be aware of like, when is this like talking about the mission behind it and things like that versus when does it cross over into vanity, you know? So just takes prayer and being in touch with the Holy Spirit a bit, I think.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And knowing you and your content a bit, it's so spirit driven. What, what is it like for you to create a post and like you get an idea and then what, how does that creative process work?
Leah knows this because she's seen it. If I get really convicted about something, I kind of drop everything and make the post. It like is a little all encompassing.
That's how the spirit works sometimes.
Yeah. No, it's okay. Creative process. I think a lot of times it'll be like a homily or something that will spark something in me. I think about the 373% thing that I was just talking about. I did a post with that a couple months ago. And that was, I had heard that first in a homily and I went home and like seriously didn't move until I had that post live. That's not every time by any means, but I think it's just like, I get these, that's how I know it's God too, is because like, I like get a million thoughts a minute and I'm like, I have to get this out before I forget it. So a lot of times if I don't have time to actually make the video, I'll like pull out my notes app and just like write just like stream of consciousness thoughts so that I can document it and circle back to it. But something like that, I did just go home and, you know, sometimes that's then filming myself. Sometimes that's pulling different previous content and doing a voiceover, but I write it in my notes app and then, you know, use my video editing apps and throw it together. But yeah, it's fun. It's those posts are the best because it just like kind of rejuvenates me to be like, no, God's working in this. So yeah.
Thanks, Mackenzie. In our final minute, what advice do you have for people who are feeling that same call as you to evangelize in that social media sphere?
Advice. That's a good question. I think we need more digital missionaries. I would say, I think there's people who are like, oh, I can't do social media. It's addictive or this or that. Great. Don't do it. Seriously, don't do it if you don't feel called to do it. It is a space that's, you know, there are pros and cons to it. But then there are people who really feel convicted to it. And you just have to start showing up. Don't wait until your first post is perfect. Don't wait until, you know, you have it all figured out. Like if the Lord's trying to say something through you, you'll figure it out. God can't, what's the saying? God can't turn a stalled car, but he can turn a moving car. So like just getting the content out in the world and trusting that God will take it from there.
Awesome. Wow. Thank you so much for joining us, Mackenzie. You can find Mackenzie on Instagram at @acaffeinatedcatholic.
Up next, Dr. Kate Walsh-Souchere helps us tackle one of the biggest challenges facing Catholic families today, the impact of social media on mental health, identity, and the spiritual life.
There has never been a time when this country has needed to hear the gospel more.
Father Richard Simon.
You know what we're doing at Relevant Radio? By we, I mean you, listener. This is not a fundraising thing. I'm not going to take a collection after it. But I think you have to see you're listening to Relevant Radio as a vocation to discipleship. There has never been a time when this country has needed to hear the gospel more. And that's what we're doing here. At Relevant Radio, we're a school of discipleship. And we're learning how to bring the gospel to people. The Catholic Church was once the greatest evangelical church going. We evangelized the nations. And we need to do it again. We need to be evangelists of the power of God and the truth of the gospel and the love that we have in Christ.
Talk that brings Christ to the world. Relevant Radio.
In today's digital age, our children are growing up in a world where social media is shaping not just their habits, but their hearts. As Catholic families, we know this isn't just a cultural concern. It's a spiritual one. With anxiety, depression, and disconnection on the rise, how do we protect the minds and souls of the next generation? Today we're joined by Kathleen Souchere, a Catholic therapist and speaker, to help us unpack the real impact of social media on our families and what can we do about it. Dr. Kate, welcome back to the show.
Oh, thank you so much. And
good
thank
to
you
be
for
with
having
you
me.
Again.
Thank you, Father Tom. Really, I mean, just thank you for having me back again.
We're happy to have you. Now, to get right into it, in your work as a Catholic therapist, what are some of the most striking ways you've seen social media affect the mental health of teens and young adults today?
Oh, thank you for asking that. So parents who raise children probably would not see this because they have one, two, or three, or maybe four kids. But if you're a teacher or a marriage and family therapist, you see lots of kids. It was the anxiousness, the sadness in the kids, the joylessness, and not knowing a way to get out of that. And they were looking for ways to get out of it, to raise spirits. And so that's the tools that therapists have. But it was the joylessness in children and adolescents that was so troubling.
We often hear stats about anxiety and depression among Gen Z, but from a Catholic lens, what deeper spiritual dangers do you see in the way that social media is shaping these young people?
Okay, all right. Well, don't like to say his name, but Satan is all over this. If Satan wanted to overtake our children, this is how he would do it. Be perfect. Help them stop thinking individually. Help them to put all of their thinking in somebody else's hands. And I will just say social media has no interest whatsoever in faith. Our Catholic religion has no interest in that, has no interest in Jesus. None. And probably balks at that. And so when our children are in that space, and research shows that many of them are at 10 plus hours a day they are on social media, when they are soaked in that message and it's devoid of Jesus, that is a problem.
Definitely.
But there are some good pages out there too.
Yes, except that they are oftentimes not eliciting that emotional charge that young people are looking for. So they're looking for the next, I hate to say the next high, but that's what they are looking for. And the pages, Father, that you're talking about, they're not necessarily eliciting that. Children have to go there, or adolescents have to go there to find that. And so it's not to say how do faith-based social media pages, how do they activate that need for the excitement? Not that. How do they go in the opposite direction and help our young people to tap into the deeper part of themselves, which their brains aren't really prepared for yet? You know this. Everybody knows that the prefrontal cortex isn't really developed until about 26, 29, some people say. This is a problem.
Now, I'm 63 years old. I was talking to a younger generation, a priest, and I said to him, hey, have you noticed how many radio stations nowadays are playing classic hits from the 70s and 80s? Maybe it's because that generation of music is the best that we've ever done, you know, in popular music. And he said, maybe it's because my generation doesn't listen to the radio. And I said, zing, thanks a lot, Father. But here we are on Relevant Radio, practicing Catholic show. It airs three times of the weekend. The youth aren't going to be listening to 1330 radio. You know, on Monday morning, it'll be on Spotify. But how many of them will find it on the internet, much less if they do happen across it, that they'd want to sit and listen to it?
And stay with it.
Yeah. Are we putting on a show that they're going to want to stay with? I'm not sure that we are. So what then should we do here?
Okay, that's a great question.
Who are we talking to,
okay,
if not to the youth who we want to influence?
Okay, talk to the parents, because the parents have more influence than they realize. Parents have the children, so I'm a former high school teacher and a former marriage and licensed therapist, Catholic religion teacher. one of the things I would say to parents when they came for parent-teacher conferences was, your children want to know what you think. Your voice for them is vital. In fact, Thomas Lycona said that at the moment of decision, children are going to hear their parents' voice in their heads. So parents, you have to be talking. He says that in his book on character, which it's maybe 20 or 30 years old. It's excellent. He's a Catholic. And he says, children need to hear what you think. So if parents are listening to this, okay, take some tips and sit down with your children and your adolescents. Don't miss that opportunity. So what should parents be saying?
Yes, exactly. Okay. That's what I was That's thinking. What I yeah. What should parents okay. be saying about this?
Well,
then?
First of all, number one, know that your kids are on the internet. If you have adolescents and they have a phone, and even if you try not to have them have the internet, their friends will have the internet. If they go over to a friend's house, that's the thing. You don't know what that family is all about. Even if you think you do, you don't. And so what the best hedge that parents can do is educate their kids. What do we accept as a family? What is right for us? What are our values? What are the virtues that mold us and shape us? And then talk about those virtues and those values and then flourish in those. Let their kids know this is what's important to us. And so parents have to be talking to their kids. Do not leave it to the internet. Do not leave it to their friends. Do not leave it to their friends' families to do this. This is the parents' responsibility. Can I share something that I said to our son?
Mm. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So I hope this is okay to share on the air. I don't know if he'll listen to this. He'll probably remember it. He was 18 and he was getting ready to go off to college. And I went in on a morning, a Saturday morning. He wasn't up yet, and I just sat down on the edge of his bed, and I said, honey, you know how Dad and I'm going to say this on the air, okay? You know how Dad and I feel about you and girls and getting involved with girls before you're married? And he goes, yeah. I said, well, Dad and I both, you know this, we don't want you doing anything that you shouldn't be doing. And he said, Mom, moms aren't talking to sons like this. And then he said, they should be, but they aren't. Mm. And so I was like, whoa, okay, well, thank you, honey, but you know how we feel. And then there was a young woman who came to our house. He was in college. We were going to bed, and they were going to go down the basement, which is a finished basement, and there's a TV. And I was on the steps, and I wiggled my finger. I said, come here. I looked at him. He's 6'4", so I was standing on a step, and he was down a few steps. And I wagged my finger. I said, no sex. He looked at me and goes, oh, I know, Mom. Mm. Well, eventually, we never saw that girl again. And he didn't tell us, but he told our daughter that all she wanted was that. Yeah, right. Parents have to be talking. Don't leave this and hope for the best. That's the wrong attitude. So if parents can do anything, it's know what you believe and say what you believe to your kids.
Now, we've seen some television commercials about drugs.
Okay.
Parents talk to your kids about drugs, and you feel like a hypocrite because when you were young, you did drugs, and therefore, how dare you tell their kids not to do what you enjoyed?
Right.
And there's an analogy here, too. If some parents feel like I was not chased in high school or college, and now I'm trying to raise my kid to be chased, and they're going to say, well, you did it. Why can't I? So how does a parent respond to such a fear?
Right. Well, and I think that because there was the sexual revolution of the 50s and 60s and 70s, so it really spanned a few decades. It wasn't just a few years. It was years that it spanned. And what we saw was there was a tremendous diminishment in morality. There were sexually transmitted infections and diseases, some not not curable. Abortion was legalized. We see the damage that that did, and we see the pain that it caused. And I would ask parents, are you fine allowing your beautiful children to experience that pain? Or do you think you want to step up and say something? You don't have to tell them that you're feeling like a hypocrite. You don't have to say that. You don't have to share your own history. You don't have to, but you do have to talk to them and just start conversations. So when I was a senior high teacher, I had sophomores. Every year I had sophomores, and I loved my sophomores. But it was also the year that most kids, if they were going to go into depression and anxiety, that was the year. The classes were hard, and they weren't really ready for that. They weren't really prepared. I always wanted to teach sophomores because I wanted to be there with them. But on Fridays, I would say to my sophomores, okay, I don't want anybody drinking and driving this weekend. I don't want anybody having sex this weekend. The first time I said that, they were shocked. They were shocked. But I said it every Friday to every class. And they told me, the students, and this was at a Catholic high school, they said, you need to say this to the eighth graders.
Oh, wow.
How about that? They said, you're getting to us too late. You need to say this to the eighth graders. And I felt like that, which I also taught eighth grade. I taught 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. I loved them. Oh, my gosh. I love my kids. And if any of them are listening, they all know it. I felt it was too raw to talk to eighth graders like that. So I hesitated, but for sure, please, parents, talk to your kids. Even if you feel like you're being a hypocrite, talk to your kids.
What are some of how can parents articulate some of these, some of the damage that social media can do?
Okay. Well, the first thing I would say is that for adults, go on it. Go on social media and see what your kids are watching. And then say, yeah, is this a little over the top? Would this be shocking if I was 14, 12? Because what happens is this. I was trained in trauma. I did trauma training, and I worked with a lot of people, adults and children, and adolescents to help them process trauma. What happens is it's the gut that is activated first, and then the vagus nerve rushes that trouble that the body feels into the brain in less than a millisecond, and it's amygdala that goes on fire in the brain. And when that happens, that's the emotion part of the brain. When that happens, the prefrontal cortex, which helps us think, that goes offline. So we can't think and respond to trauma at the same time. If our children are experiencing trauma online and we don't know that, so start with going online, see what they are seeing, and then watch those things with them. Don't just let them go into that room by themselves and watch it. Watch it with them and talk with them about it. Do you think this is something that you should have in your brain? How do you feel as you're watching this? Those kinds of things.
What about parents who feel like, I'm starting too late? My kid's already into it.
I'm here to say it's never too late. That's what I'm here to say. I am here to say it is never too late. Even if your kids are 18 and you have never had that discussion, have it today. Start it. Go online and see what they are watching. So just before we started, we mentioned the dark internet. I know nothing about this. I know nothing except that I've read that it's there. And I think that seems pretty troubling. And I think young people can wander their way there so easily. There is a movie that is mentioned in an article on the Catholic World Report on social media, tweens and teens, data, consequences, and solutions. And it states that they want parents to watch something called, I had it marked here. Well, I'll find it. That's not very helpful, is it? Mm. Okay. The social dilemma. That's what it's called. The social dilemma. And it says that everything that people pull up, there are algorithms that know us better than we know ourselves. And they feed us more of what we have typed in and looked at. So young people are being soaked oftentimes in things that they shouldn't be soaked in. So start. Don't think it is never too late, is mm-hmm. what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. So I'm 26. The reality is that this is where my generation is. They're mm-hmm. on social media. They're mm-hmm. using it. Our archdiocese here, we have social media accounts. How can I feel like we have a duty and an obligation to be where the people are, also knowing that these things have harm. So what would you say to that?
Okay, be there. Be there, but bring good. Be there. We have to walk in that world. St. Paul went to the very areas he was imprisoned, and when the earthquake happened and their shackles fell off, they did not leave. I mean, he was imprisoned. He didn't avoid the difficult things, but he brought the gospel. That's what we must do. Now, I'm just getting goosebumps. I don't know if anybody else just is getting, but bring the gospel where you are. So I wear a Catholic cross. I wear my Mary medal. I have four little necklaces, and then the pearls I have on today are from my mother-in-law, who always said the rosary every day. She gave me a rosary. It's so beautiful. But evangelize everywhere you go. Evangelize online. Counter somebody. Take that courageous step to counter something that you read that is troublesome. So there was something, not to go into Charlie Kirk, and I don't, but there was something about his Saint Michael the Archangel pin that when he was shot, the paramedics accidentally flipped it off. And his wife apparently wore it this past weekend when she was speaking. And I wrote on that LinkedIn post, we should all be saying the St. Michael Archangel prayer every day. We need this. Now, I'm not sure what impressions are when you make, I don't know what that means, but I had 899 impressions about that comment. I have no idea what that means. I don't know. But we should all go there, be there, but share your faith. Mm-hmm. Don't mm-hmm. let it be something that's a blank page and that you stay out. Your voice is needed there.
Definitely. And we had our other interview was Mackenzie Hunter. Her account is called The Caffeinated Catholic. And that is her mission, is to bring the gospel in these ordinary ways to social media.
That's beautiful. And that is exactly it. Think about how many weeks of the year we have ordinary time. 40? Is it 40 weeks of the year, I think?
34 is the most.
Okay, 34. But then, so when we have Advent and Lent and mm-hmm. Easter, but most of our weeks are ordinary time. How can we bring our extraordinary message of the gospel into the ordinariness of life? Yeah, that's our job. That's what we evangelize, is that. And just go do it. Have the courage. I was reading something. So I love the virtues. But there was somebody that challenged me, not me personally, but challenged us, and asked us to develop the virtue that you struggle with most. Well, the virtue I struggle with most is courage. I'm like, I'm the cowardly lion. Mm. No. Do not send me. I don't want to say that. I don't want to do that. I'll just stand over here. People can look over. No. Go to develop the virtue you struggle with most. Yeah. So mine is courage.
Yeah. This seems a little contrary. I kind of want to dive into it a little more. That we're telling parents to have their kids stay off of social media, to not use it, but also telling people to go be on social media and bring the gospel. How can we reconcile that?
Okay, exactly as you just said, that we are there. Social media is where you are. And young people, when I was a substitute for 3 years, the kids could have their phones until the bell. nobody sat at a desk and talked with somebody next to them. Every single high school student was on the phone, looking at social media, looking at their accounts. They are there. So, but we have to know what kind of attitude should we be taking there. If there's something dangerous, don't follow it. Don't go there. Report it. Talk to your parents about it. If they are kids, parents, talk to your kids. Engage them. Don't leave social media to somebody else. This is your job as parents. Your kids are on social media. Accept that. And be like St. Paul. Go to the hard areas. Don't just stay. He was the apostle to the Gentiles. He went to the very areas that Jesus' apostles, his legitimate apostles, did not go. He went. We have to go, too.
Definitely. Definitely.
Well, if a parent says, I'm really concerned not only about my child's social media behavior, but I'm seeing signs of depression,
yes,
anxiety, my child maybe needs more help than mom's voice.
Right.
What do you say to mom?
Okay. Oh, I say, mom, make a call today. Make a call right now. Because here's the problem, and I don't mean to scare anybody, but I worked with young people. And so, make a call. If you have concerns, do not set those concerns aside. Because young people have a very short ability to read reality. And it's very brief. And what happens is when they feel sad, they can go over the edge very quickly with very little assistance. We have to intervene early, as early as you can. If they tell you that they're sad, that they feel, just keep an eye on them.
Whom should they call, okay, or what kind of website,
beautiful,
or what,
okay,
what organization do you recommend?
Beautiful. Start with the Catholic Psychotherapy Association. So that's in Minneapolis. That's where we met when I was a therapist. I would go to these meetings, the Catholic Psychotherapy Association. It lists Catholic therapists in the nation, and probably around the world, but for sure in the nation. And I know I was on meetings with people who were on the East Coast or the West Coast, and it was light here and it was dark there. Mm-hmm. So, but there are Catholic therapists. I would recommend getting to a Catholic therapist. And if you can't get into a Catholic therapist, see a Christian therapist. I worked for a company called Christian Heart, and they have six offices around the cities. There are Christian therapists. There are Catholic therapists. Make a call. Make a call.
Great. Thank you so much, Dr. Kate, for joining us and for this discussion. I hope we can continue it throughout the show.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank
I really
you very
encourage
much, Kate.
Parents.
It's good
thank
to be
you.
With you.
Great to be with you guys. Thank you.
Don't go away. We'll be back in just a moment to share some upcoming events happening right here in our Archdiocese.
A look at the news and issues of the day through the eyes of our faith. The Drew Mariani Show.
I came across a series called Bring 'Em Back. Melanie Juneau, who's the editor-in-chief at the Catholic Stand, what final advice would you give to those who are listening in terms of helping to bring those you love back to the church?
Love them and be open and listen. Don't lecture, listen. And initiate conversations, but listen, you know? And invite and be yourself. Like, you don't have to be a theologian. You don't have to have all the answers. It's a conversation. And share your faith, how God has touched you, filled the empty places in you, loved you, healed you, and how it's changed your life. Because people are not fulfilled. They are not happy, and they are looking. And the Catholic Church has the answer.
Yeah, amen to that.
The Drew Mariani Show, 2 p.m. Central on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Welcome back to Practicing Catholic. I'm Paul Sadek, technical producer.
And I'm Rachel McCallum, your producer.
Right now, Leah and Father Tom are off sipping Mai Tais at the tropical resort, so they couldn't be with us. But what a good show today. What a hot topic. on social media.
Yeah, no, definitely an important topic. We kind of got two different perspectives from Dr. Kate and then Mackenzie Hunter, just weighing in on the pros and cons of social media nowadays.
Well, it does have its pros, but my gosh, there's always too much of a good thing.
yeah, for sure. It's definitely a relevant topic. I know a lot of people my age, you know, that's just, there's a lot of the doom scrolling, but it's also a good space to go and evangelize, like Mackenzie pointed out. So.
Well, yeah, and that's important. That's important to do. It's important to know and important to do. That's what we said about the internet when it first started blossoming. This is a great place to evangelize. So I tried to do my part for a few years on that. We have a ton of good things coming up in the Archdiocese of St. Paul and Minneapolis, as usual.
Right, yeah.
One is an evening with Father Greg Boyle, S.J. Archdiocese of St. Paul and Minneapolis invites you to join them Friday, October 23rd, 5 to 8 p.m. at St. Thomas More in St. Paul for an inspiring evening with the Ignatian Volunteer Corps Twin Cities. That sounds interesting in itself. Beloved speaker and author Father Greg Boyle, S.J., will share a powerful message on the healing power of love in divided times. Come celebrate community, compassion, and hope. You can learn more by visiting archspm.org/events.
And if you're curious about spiritual direction, you can join us on Monday, October 20th from 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. at St. Paul's Monastery for an introductory session. Whether you're feeling a longing for a deeper relationship with God or simply sensing some spiritual restlessness, the session offers a welcoming space to learn more, ask questions, and explore the next steps. You can find out more by heading over to archspm.org/events. Again, that's coming up Monday, October 20th from 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. at St. Paul's Monastery.
Let me put you on the spot. Do you have a spiritual director, Rachel?
No. I've only been to one priest, and it was one session, and it didn't end up working with my schedule. There was a time conflict, but I've heard from so many people that it's just such a good practice.
I have an excellent one, but I haven't seen him in about 3 years, so... It's way past time. It is not necessary that a spiritual director be a priest. I find it very helpful because within a session, I can go to confession then.
Exactly. Yeah, I've heard from so many people that it's so helpful to just kind of get everything out in the open and then find healing, like you said, in the sacrament of confession.
Well, is God calling you to the priesthood? Not you, Rachel. Young men, high school juniors through age 24 without a college degree are invited to a weekend of prayer, reflection, and discovery at the Vianney Discernment Retreat. That'll be October 24th through the 26th at Christ the King Retreat Center in Buffalo. This is being led by Archbishop Bernard Hebda and Father Mark Pavlik, our vocations director. The retreat offers insight into discernment, very important, seminary life, and the path to St. John Vianney College Seminary. If you want to find out more or register or both, visit archspm.org/events. That is a discernment retreat coming up October 24th through 26th, Christ the King Retreat Center in Buffalo.
That's awesome. I always think it's so cool that they offer things like that because you really never know until you go and try something. You're not going to know if God's calling you to it or not.
Well, that's so true. And it's also true that vocation is God's plan for you.
Right.
And it's up to you to find it and then to do it.
Exactly. Put in the effort. Put in the work.
Yeah.
Yep, exactly.
Some great things coming up next week on Practicing Catholic. Zach Jansen, our old pal, will join us for a deep dive into the movie A Hidden Life. And Dave Herbacek, another good friend, opens up about how reporting for the church deepened both his work and his faith. That's next week on Practicing Catholic. So, on behalf of Rachel and Father Tom and Leah, I'm Paul Sadek. Hear the word, receive the grace,
and practice the faith.
Thank you for listening to Practicing Catholic on Relevant Radio 1330. Practicing Catholic is a production of the Archdiocese of St. Paul in Minneapolis. To listen to past shows, find us wherever you get your podcasts. And stay connected with us. Visit our website, practicingcatholicshow.com, or follow us on social media at Practicing Catholic Show. We'll be back again next week. Go.